This episode of Unpacked is brought to you by the Complex Canine Community, a supportive space for owners of complex and complicated dogs. This is a truly one-of-a-kind space in the dog world. Jess Adam, licensed therapist and coach with a passion for helping the human side of the leash, helps guardians and trainers work through the very real emotions of working with big feeling dogs, drawing from proven clinical psychotherapy techniques. In this community, you'll have access to discussion threads, a resource library, professionally led monthly support calls, and opportunities for community connection. You can use code UNPACKEDPOD, that's UNPACKEDPOD, to get a month free when you join the Complex Canine community. Go to complexcanine.community or click the link in the show notes and use code UNPACKEDPOD for a free month.
Welcome to Unpacked, an open-minded podcast taking a clinical, not political, approach to helping pet parents around the world. I'm Sailor Jerry, certified dog trainer, virtual dog training revolutionary, owner of Tulsa Pack Athletics, and creator of the Open-Minded Approach.
And I'm Madison, her friend, certified dog trainer and behavior consultant. Together, we have nearly three decades of experience in behavioral dog training.
We've been working with real dogs and the humans who love them to create solutions to problematic behaviors that feel too big for them to tackle on their own. In this episode, we are giving you a peek into our worlds and minds, following through on our promise to add transparency to this industry.
This is your chance to listen in as we fully unpack a case plan with one of our incredible guests.
You will hear a breakdown of specific suggestions and protocols that are given at the start of a training program. You will also hear every question our insightful and inquisitive guests toss at us.
If you're looking for a glimpse behind the scenes of detailed training plan conversations, settle in with us and unpack. Well, hello, Isabel. We are so excited to be meeting with you today and be going over your plan. One of the first things that we like to do before we kind of go section by section through it is to kick it over to you, see if you have any questions, because I think a lot of times you can read through a plan like that and be like, I need to clarify some things. So talk to us about what you were kind of left with after reading it.
I was kind of, I got most of it, but my main questions were, knowing that, I'm expecting this week, I was kind of wondering how to introduce Taz and the baby in a way, not introduce them, but more so like, how will I respond when I walk in through the door with the baby, something completely new to him. So I'm kind of,
what a fantastic and specific question about like the moment that you're coming home with the baby. So let's not answer that right now, but let's make sure when we get to the part where we're going to talk through all the baby doggy introduction interaction stuff, that we can highlight that specific moment and things that we can do to really set that up for success. But high level answer is that the baby and Taz are not going to be interacting for quite a long time. It's going to be all observation with lots of safety and management. Jerry, you have anything to add? I know we're just quickly touching on this, but anything to add to that?
I concur.
Cool.
So mom of so many children, I concur.
Isabel, you have some pretty big things going on right now. So you're due in less than a week. And you moved 4 days. Doing 4 days. I was talking to the other guests that we've kind of onboarded at the same time as you, and I was like, with all the love in the world, y'all have to wait. Because Isabel and Taz are like, we have a time. We have an actual due date. We have an actual deadline. So we're gonna prioritize that, and we're gonna get with her. And you moved. You moved 2-3 weeks ago now.
Yeah. I would say it's about the 2.5 week mark that we've been here. Yeah. So it's just been a lot all at once. It's a little overwhelming. So I know that's
a little. It's a lot. A lot going on. Your whole world has changed, and so is Taz's. And the change is not over. So it's important to, even in the little bit of time that we have left, try and do what we can to set Taz and you up for success with this new life. Okay, so Jerry, I know there was something when we were looking through the medical intake information, there was something that you wanted to talk about related to the persistent, I think it was like a persistent UTI, right?
Yeah, I want to pull this up so that I have that in front of me.
Isabel, why don't you tell us about
in-house training. I was like, wait. There was something really specific. Go ahead, Isabel. I'm sorry.
It actually stopped when we moved here. But before then, for the past 6-7 months, I would say, he started getting frequent UTIs.
Here it is. Yeah.
And they would happen monthly to the point where we would wake up and there would be like little spots on the bed where he was, you know, kind of like leaking the blood, I would say. But it wasn't bloody. It was more pinkish, but it was still alarming.
Blood tinged?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what happened?
Well, when I first saw that, I freaked out. I was like, oh God, like I need to do something. So I called the vet and they were like, oh, well, you can give him these cranberry chews from Tractor Supply for a day. And if it doesn't stop it, then come back and take him to a vet. So we did that. And sure enough, the next day, he was fine. There was no issues. Everything was fine. So for the next 30 days, we gave him 2 of those a day and it stopped it. And then so I followed up for 2 months with that and he had no problems at all. I was taking him out very frequently, giving him way more water. And then it wasn't until he was off of those for a week. And after that week, then they started to come back. The same thing. We woke up with that same stuff on the bed and we're like, oh God. So I ran to the store again and I got him those. And I've also been giving him...
What is it that you're giving him? Tell me exactly. Say it again. I'm sorry.
Apple cider vinegar. We've been giving him 2 tablespoons a day. And that so far he hasn't had any UTIs at all. But I think I can...
Is he just drinking it?
Yeah. We put it in his kibble and then we rehydrate it with water.
Okay. And who told you to do that? Where did you get that?
I was actually looking... I called a local vet. And they were like, oh, well, sometimes the enzymes in the apple cider vinegar will help them flush out any bacteria in their system. So I was like, okay, tried it. And so far he hasn't had any problems. So I'm not sure. I think it's working because he hasn't been on the chews. It's just been apple cider vinegar.
So after hearing you say all of that, regardless of the way that you were treating it, like if we took all the treatment out of it's a recurring infection. So it may appear as though he's getting symptom relief from it. But if there's really not a reason that a dog should be having recurring urinary tract infections, save that this particular dog has a problem with crystals, or which there are different kinds, or the dog has some, like, let's say a dog that has really long hair by its vulva and it's not getting cleaned, and then that bacteria is sitting there and then they get recurring UTIs from that. What I would say about that, again, not a veterinarian, just longtime vet tech that has looked at more urine under a microscope than I really realized until this moment just now. It's like, wow.
So
I mean, every day you're looking at, it's just a big part of your job as a vet tech is to read your analysis. Yeah. And so when I think about the medical history that I've taken from people, the urine analysis that I've looked at, the things I've learned from veterinarians, and then, of course, the classes that I've taken. First of all, I think the supplement that you were giving is geared towards urinary health in general, so it could give some benefits, but generally that's geared towards, I would say, more kidney health, and it's something that you do as a maintenance to maintain urinary health, so it's great. If there's nothing wrong with giving that if you were suggested to do that, especially if your dog has chronic UTIs, but the what you're leaving out there, which you potentially could be leaving out, is that there's a bacterial overgrowth that's really just being kind of suppressed to the point of not being symptomatic anymore, and then going up again and being symptomatic and then going, because it certainly wouldn't be normal for a dog to just keep having recurring UTIs. Dogs will absolutely have one-offs in their life. That can happen. Sometimes, this isn't scientific, but territorial changes, territory changes. It's something that they say happens in all animal bodies, even ours too. Those can trigger UTIs. Anecdotal, take up what it's worth.
Yeah, but I would say products are, like you said, more designed for support and not support so much. Yeah, and it's not like he has an issue that needs to be treated. So,
well, generally, that looks like them doing a full, complete urinalysis. Yeah. And they're actually not super expensive. You just, you know, they get some urine and then they look at it under the microscope to make sure that they're not missing anything, because a lot of
times, then we know
dogs
then
will
we
need
know
antibiotics.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, if a dog has an underlying chronic infection, it absolutely can affect their behavior. Absolutely. It's like when we have a chronic underlying condition.
Right.
And it's same. Like, it just makes you really on edge, so that's possible. So I just wanted to mention that, because we as trainers have to stop at that first step and be like, I think something is going on here that is outside the area of my expertise.
Yeah.
And I need to, you know, we need to just give you that information the best that I can. But I think my information's a little bit.
No, I think that makes
extra because of my experience, but still, I'm not a vet. So, but that's what I would do. That's what I would really like. This is a very, very important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he definitely needs to, whether or not, you know, he's seen in an office exam, because we could talk about, like, if that's something that's really stressful for him, and we have to talk through vet anxiety as well. But the urinalysis can normally be done with just a tech visit, where
I can 1,000% teach you how to make a urine catcher out of any number of household items. Any number. And
if that Instagram live doesn't happen soon, I swear I'll unfollow you. I'm so ready for this.
Before they made urine catchers where you could actually purchase them, like from suppliers.
Those like retractable
devices. Make them out of cutoff cups and wire hangers. I tell you what, I could catch urine.
I'm so ready for
this.
If you don't make a reel or a live about this,
I know I need to.
I'm ready. Okay, I know we have limited time here, and I want to make sure we can get through everything and then also have time for your specific questions. So let's move on to the assessment. So what we saw, and this is something that I went through everything, I gave my assessment. Jerry separately, before she reads my assessment, goes through everything, and then she makes her assessment, and then she uses that to verify mine. That's how we work together, is I collect the input, we both separately review that input, and kind of just like, take a look at what we're seeing here, and she's going to see some things I don't, and vice versa. So this is our sort of combined assessment, combined and verified.
And you also need to mention,
TSM,
that if we did it any other way, it wouldn't get done. I think that's the important part of
this.
It
would be a lot of sticky notes on a wall.
It requires Madison to do an incredible amount of work, and
I like
maybe I'm a good editor. Maybe that's what I bring to the table.
So we saw a dog with a very high level of excitement and needs more arousal management, but you have a pro at that here who, you know, we're just going to, right off the bat, we're going to be able to give you access to Jerry's course, which is going to give you at least something to get started with that. I know he's reactive on the leash, and he's a low confident dude, and those things, well, the reactivity especially, is going to have to be a conversation for another day and a plan for another season of your life, because we have other things we need to be focused on right now. Because Taz is displaying aggressive behavior around the food items that are dropped on the floor and against the cats, and or towards the cats, I should say. And he has a long list of sounds that produce a pretty substantial fear response. And following the recent move, he's also showing some separation anxiety, howling and escape attempts and things like that. But our number one priority is to, in the assessment we wrote, it's for Taz to be prepared for the new baby, but really it's to help you be prepared to manage Taz and the new baby. Like, that's what it is. It's really about you feeling confident in just a couple of days here, going into that feeling like everyone can be safe. That's the number one goal. Number one priority is safety right now. Everything else can and will come later, but can't come later unless we do safety now and like risk management now. Anything to add to that, Jerry, or tag on?
I'm just thinking about the conversation I had with you, Madison. Well, I would say that I can't echo enough, and this is coming from just a trainer standpoint and a vet tech standpoint too. I cannot tell you, and I won't tell you, some of the things that I have seen, because people did not manage their very large dogs around their babies. And I had one friend in particular who, this is not the story, Madison. I had a friend who her boundaries were different than mine, and with her children, with her dogs. she allowed her son to climb, and still does to this day. I'm sure she has more kids now, but allowed her son to climb all over her dogs. And it disturbed, and they were labs, and they were pretty affable, you know, so it just disturbed me, because I've never had that kind of a dog. I've always had the kind of dog that you and I have. And I just couldn't even go over to her house, and I never, ever let her children around Enzo, because I just have seen some really bad things happen. And I can't tell you that I've ever seen a person blamed. It's always the dog. And it's just really frustrating as a person that is, you know, kind of on the other side of it, that we want to get this information to you guys, because we really do want to prevent these types of traumas. It's straight up trauma if something happens in your home, and especially on your watch, if it could have been prevented. So that's my spiel. I'll stop there.
I think that's really valuable. I think people need to hear that.
I really, and I don't mean to demonize any particular breeds or anything.
It's not about that.
Yeah, the right management for your dog. There's always going to be that dog that's like, I love kids. Come hither to me, children of the world. I've never had a dog like that. I've had dogs that tolerate children if they're advocated for, and they just are pretty neutral around them. But I've never had that. So it's okay if your dog is not like that. And
I think they're rare.
It's still workable. Yeah, I think they're rare too.
Because dogs love predictability, and children, dogs love predictability, and children are not predictable, period.
That's right.
It's super uncomfortable for them. So
one of my best friends, one of my best friends now has a little 2-year-old, and Enzo is cool, calm, and collected by him. And she also has a very different parenting style than I do. And her children will run in the house and scream and do it. But Enzo knows they're not going to touch him. So he does like to go over there with me. We're in a different circumstance that would make him very uncomfortable. But those kids never touch him. And so he feels much more at ease there. And that's an appropriate management system for me, so I can include him. But other people's kids, I don't know them like that. You know, her kids, I can be like... So keep that in mind, that there's always going to be, in terms of management, there's going to be people in your life that you know will listen to you. And there's going to be people in your life that you know are going to blow you off about what you say about your dog. So keep, you know, you got to pick up the slack in those areas for them.
I do. That's something I've noticed too, is when I have family over and I'm like, you need to leave him alone and kind of back off. They're like, why? No, like he needs this. I'm like, no. I can read his body language. He does not like that. Like, that's not the most like. But I agree with you guys on the kids and the dog. Like, I don't really like those situations either. And I hate seeing it in my family, because I'm like, oh, like anything can happen. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the dog will be blamed, and it's not for people.
Yeah. So let's.
Well, you're ahead. You're ahead if you know that.
You are.
You know, like, hey, this, something's not right. I need to look at the body language. You're on the right track, because a lot of people are either ignorant to it because they just truly don't know, or they don't want to know, or whatever. So,
well, and you're ahead here because we're here and we're talking about this, and we may only have 4 days, but that's 4 days more than if you came to us after you'd already given birth. And I think that there are opportunities to have these conversations earlier on, but again, you're here and you're showing up, and we know how serious you are about getting this put in place. And none of that, you know, was to scare you. That's not what it's about, but it is a reality of what we face, unfortunately. So it is, I think, really valuable to share that. So let's take a quick kind of goal reframe, knowing that we had a long list of things ultimately that you do want to help Taz with, of like top priority number one, baby prep and baby boundaries. And then short term, working on some of the food aggression with the cats, working on some of the in-home fears, and working on the arousal and some of that long-term stuff that we have to, again, another conversation for another day. We can get into the leash reactivity, the separation anxiety, the confidence building exercises. But for now, we're just going to put management in place for that. So let's look at our management plan. We are going full management mode. We're buttoning up every button, every single one, right? We're not even going to really talk about modification in terms of behavior. Not really. We're going to talk about modification in terms of some of his fear responses and helping him feel a little bit differently about that, and sort of de-stressing his everyday, because if he's still having this constant stress from the cats and his resources and the noise from the washer machine, and then now there's this new baby, like that's a lot, right? So we need to try and reduce the stress hormone production that's kind of happening in a 24-hour period. So like I said, the other stuff is just going to have to come later, like the leash reactivity. And we have tons of resources for that, self-paced and not, for, you know, as and when you're like, oh, okay, I really need to work on this right now. But we know we have today things to work on. So the baby boundaries. I sent you a resource specifically of an amazing Instagram account to follow. It's called Dog Meets Baby, and they are fantastic, phenomenal resource. I recommend anybody that is planning to start a family or in the process of starting a family to just have that content be coming into your world, because I think that's really, really helpful. As we mentioned before, Taz and the baby are going to observe, but they're not going to interact, period. You're going to use all different kinds of management. Always one piece of management for sure. And in some instances, you might want two, and we could talk about that. So different forms of management, types of management. We're talking a leash, a kennel, a gate, a muzzle, right? I think a muzzle is a great tool. Not that we want to use it as an excuse to put our dog in like really risky situations. I don't think that that's ever a good idea or ever called for or ever fair. But when we are ready to start taking forward steps, we can do so while still maintaining safety, right? Anything to add with that, Jerry, and specifically around like the food in turn. So where should, you know, Taz be when the baby's eating, when the cats are eating, vice versa?
Well, for me, I know what I think is safe. I can only make suggestions from my perspective as a mother. I can't, you know, so there's always, you're going to hear different things from different people. When my kids were really little babies, infants like that, it's not as big of an issue because you're not feeding them. I mean, it's mostly you're either nursing or if you're doing bottle, whatever. So in the beginning, there will be a tendency to want to think that that doesn't count or that doesn't matter or whatever, but it does build in a habit of you letting him around when there is something going on where the baby's taking food in. And so you can use different things for that. Some people will say, don't let the dog in the room at all. Some people will say, you can be on your place bed and be in the room. I think that it's different for every dog, but I certainly, as children get older, if they are eating, they will be doing the scatters accidentally and they have it on their hands and dogs who are at their level, at their eye level,
jackpot,
know they're not supposed to lick things off of their fingers. And then the kids like, and it's all very innocent in theory. Because I think people want to believe that their dogs somewhere in there are rationalizing that they need to deny instincts because their relationship with their dog parent is so wonderful. That's delusional, you know? I mean, that's... So if there's a little kid around with sticky fingers dropping food on the floor, the dog's going to hang around. I'm pretty sure that pretty soon that child is going to become bigger and start moving around. And then it can become a situation where resource guarding happens against a child in the home. And that you do not want to go down that road. That's going down the road of a bite. That's going down when really it could all be prevented by just making whatever rules that you feel. So a lot of that has to do with what your house looks like. You know, if you've got six different rooms that you're going in and out of, yeah, you got a different room, dude. But what happens when you've got a mostly open space? Baby gates, that's a big one that I used. I know Madison uses the playpens a lot too. But make sure there's something there, because it takes one weird sound from a baby that a dog has not heard before, and food being involved in a history of this happening, for something catastrophic to happen.
Yeah, and I think that when you're looking at Taz's mealtime, I think that's something where, again, it's just the habit where Taz is in his kennel while he's eating. because again, it's just built-in management. And that way, as your baby, you know, starts to be a little bit more mobile, you don't have to have that concern of, well, is he going to crawl over towards, you know, towards the feeding station? Well, I don't have to worry about it because it's a kennel and everybody's safe.
And I would even, I'm sorry, I want to add what you said about the kennel. What I would say for when babies are crawling and toddling, I really honestly don't even like just the kennel. Because if your dog is eating in the kennel and there's not some really specific management rules around, we do not touch the kennel to your child, they go up to it. And that can create anxiety and a need to guard, you know, in a dog. So there's nothing wrong with making sure that you've got a door closed in between the two when he's eating, or whatever that scenario looks like for you. Or maybe there is a baby gate to that room where his kennel is. It's just also try to avoid babies going up and, you know, window dancing in the kennel, because they will. They don't know. They're just like little kids. They're just out doing what little kids do.
I think that when anything high value is involved for Taz, whether it's the baby or the cats, you know, they're just going to be a part of his life. So I think that's where you want two levels of management, like the kennel and the gate, or the kennel and a door, right? I think that's perfect, like best case scenario. In another room, behind a closed door in his kennel. Perfect. Ain't nobody going to mess with him with that stuff. And that's not like punishing him. That's giving him the gift of privacy. I think he will enjoy that. I would. Like, you know, especially with if the cats are really annoying and when he has stuff that's like really special and valuable to him. Now he can just relax and have that time, and he might really enjoy being set aside and having like quiet decompressing. You could put like the white noise or some classical music for him, give him a little relaxation zone. You might want to be building yourself a relaxation zone, but we could do that for Taz too. Let's, while we, you know, have time, I don't want to get cut off before we get back to your very specific question. So let's talk about the day coming home with the baby, because you have access to us. You can always come back and ask questions about this plan. It's a lot to go through. It's not designed to be like, okay, plan done in one day. What's next? Like, no, this takes a while to sift through and start to you know, step into those solutions. So first of all, in between now and then, if you haven't started like unpackaging baby things, I want you to start doing that. Several items a day. Having him getting used to seeing them and not interacting with them, right? Baby toys look a lot like dog toys. I want you to start using any products that you're going to use after you give birth now. So he starts getting used to the smell of them now, because that can be really weird of like, oh my God, everything has changed,
it's
right?
It's so overwhelming. That's the most overwhelming thing to dogs is the smell. Smells like, I love the smell of babies. But it's like, we're hardwired as human beings, especially women, to love that. And it does something to us. That non-dogs.
But it's potent.
It's potent.
And they smell it. Like, they know when a baby walks in. And you can almost see it if they've never encountered it. Because there's this, like, pupil dilated, like, what is that moment?
It's gonna touch me. Yeah.
Right, right. So don't just like, okay, we got off the call, I'm going to go unpackage everything. Couple items at a time. Start to introduce it. Think about too what schedule shifts are going to happen in your life in just a few days. And this is advice for you too. I don't have any kids, but start making those schedule shifts now. You're doing your body a favor starting to get onto this new clock.
Yes, I'd like to interject here.
Thank you.
And please say, whatever schedule that you're making, you can crumble it up and you can throw it into the trash can.
that's probably true.
Yeah.
And then light it on fire.
Your plan B and C also, right?
Also gonna burn.
Yeah. You're not gonna know, but I know what Madison means. So things like, you know that if now or you're sleeping until whatever, that's not gonna happen anymore. You're not gonna have that time. So if you can't sleep and you still have to get up at the same time and you know that you can't and you're need whatever, all these things, like maybe just bump stuff an hour earlier. You know, maybe just start some wild difference that you know that's going to happen. No matter what you do, it's going to be really hard to plan for it. I think it's really more about your support system. So is the support system there to help you when the literal baby potentially hits the fan? Who's there to help you? Who's there to help you in community?
I actually have a lot of people. I have my fiance, my mom, my brother, my sister, my aunt, my grandma. So I have a
very that warms my heart.
Okay, perfect. So I actually want you to get at least one extra set of hands at your apartment the day you're coming home with the baby. And I want you to practice that in the next couple of days. Have that person come over and be like, I want you on Taz duty. Show them how to do some place work, some stationing, giving Taz some snackies over away from the baby. I don't want Taz having food being near the baby, but I do want it to be a positive thing. And I want it to be associated with positive things and things that he likes. And I think keep it really, really short. So build whatever nice decompression zone is going to be his and practice that over the next few days. And then after he's had about 10 minutes in the new baby environment, put him up. Right? Put him in his nice little quiet zone with something awesome in his kennel behind that closed door with that classical music, because that was probably enough for him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And do little bursts and try and keep it really, really calm. Put gates up in between them. Use those levels of management. You know, have him across the room on place on leash. Embark on the muzzle conditioning, right? Like we have options here, but I think it's important that there's always 1 to 2 levels of management involved. And day of, keep it really, really short. Don't expect him to just, okay, now I'm around the baby 24 hours a day. I think give him little bursts of relaxing on his own. And I know we're getting short on time here. So any last questions from you, Isabel?
I would say for when he is feeding with, like, I know with the cats and stuff like that, I did try closing the door and it worked really well. He was like a lot more at ease. But I noticed when, before I closed the door, when I went to give him his food, he kind of got, his body language changed. He was very stressed. I was seeing stressed. His eyes were like really wide. Then his ears went back, almost like he was in trouble, but I hadn't said a word to her. Is there?
I think he's probably used to having to protect his food from the cats and then thinking he's done something wrong or being yelled at for that maybe. And so there's just like a lot, I think, of not great emotions around the eating process. And as we give him this space and build that trust back up, I think you're going to see less of that, because we are stopping the situation that was happening before where the cat sort of had access to him while he was eating. I think that's as a result of that. And we should see that change. And if, you know, it's an important thing to keep an eye on though. Good job catching that. It's really important.
Yeah. I just wanted to know if it was okay for him to be separated and like close the gate of the cage and then still close the door, like if that was gonna cause any more issues, or if it was just gonna, like, if it's okay for him, because I know we were doing scattered feeding. Is it okay if he's just eating out of his?
I would go back to the bowl for now. Yep, just for now. Yep. All right. Well, we will be in touch soon to go through the rest of this with you. But thank you so much for your time today, and we will talk to you soon.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Unpacked was created by Jerry Sheriff and Madison Simpson. Edited and produced by Josh Wasta under the supervision of Straight Up Dog Talk LLC and Emily Breslin.
If you are enjoying this podcast, follow or subscribe to be sure you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Looking for more honest and relatable dog content? Check out our sister podcast, Straight Up Dog Talk. See you next time.